Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Al. We appreciate introducing us here. I'm Dave Brown. I'm here with Iron Mike Irons on Entitled Town. Al is he's in a really good mood, actually, back from he got a lot of rest and relaxation. I haven't heard him complain about one thing. Are you having the same experience with Al this week?
He did not swing his helmet at me, so I'm feeling good about my relationship with Al.
That's a first.
Agreed.
That's the first time. That's the first week since we started doing the show that Al has not tried to club you to death with a football helmet.
And you have not suspended him yet, which is telling.
I think he's trying to defend himself. But in fairness, it is like one of those tiny football helmets that you get ice cream out of. So
I wasn't going to mention that, but that's fine.
Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe calm down about the tiny football helmet that's made out of plastic.
Dave, that was a really good win today.
Well, it was it. I mean, I'm sure that right now or
very the goalposts are being moved in Boston media for damn sure.
There's goalpost. There's like it's like goalpost musical chairs right now, and they're just shuffling them around everywhere. I would imagine right about now, if not the game's been over about half an hour, so maybe in the last half hour or so, there have been some local post game type shows. Featuring people like Albert Breer and Ted Johnson or whoever they want to throw out there. It legitimately doesn't matter. They find some media person who's got an established name and sit them next to somebody who used to play football and talk about how terrible it is to go on the road in November and win a football game in the National Football League.
I am not going to let anybody piss on my parade, least of all Albert Breer. That's a good win. That had a real December, January feel to it. The Patriots can beat you. You know, it's kind of cliche to the Patriots. People
with a pretty menacing defensive line coming.
A very menacing defensive line. Thank God that they didn't play this game in Ohio, because Lord knows what could have happened.
Well, let me just say that, you know, and Ted Johnson, it's an interesting that he's done this a few times where he's gone on it. Because when Ted Johnson played, this is how they won. this is like 2001, 2003, 2004. Those three Super Bowl winning teams had a lot of wins just like this one.
Well, particularly the 01 team. The 01 team won that way a lot, winning ugly. And the people like plagiarist extraordinaire Ron Borges would shit all over them for it. But what they did today, you know, my point I was trying to make was that, yeah, they've won in the past. Throwing the ball, they've won in the past. Running the ball. Mm-hmm. But I think what's really great is like what they're doing now is they're not making mistakes. They're kicking three field goals because they know they can get closer and their defense keeping them the game. They're not going to be analytical darlings because of that. But that's a good win. I didn't feel like Philadelphia was going to have a chance to score. You know, you take out the 95-yard drive, they had 160 yards for the game. And the Patriots really took control of that game after they fell behind 10-0.
Made good adjustments. I mean, listen,
They started rushing Wentz. Once they kept Wentz in the pocket, he seemed really uncomfortable.
So let me say this. They lost, the one-man fun machine, Lane Johnson, at a certain point, and that wasn't the right tackle, and that wasn't good for them. But I'm not going to sit here and paint this as some kind of tremendous performance by the Patriots offense. They absolutely struggled tonight. Both teams did. It was a very cold, windy game in Philadelphia, the kind of game you expect in November. And in that said, there's a lot of work that the Patriots offense has to do. They should be getting Isaiah Wynn back. I think that right there, I think there are four or five plays you can point to in this game where a better performance from the left tackle makes a big difference.
Oh, absolutely.
Drives going. But here's the point. There is no rule that says your offense or your defense or your special teams has to meet a minimum criteria for you to win. You can, if you can win when one phase of your team does not have its best performance, that is a good thing. That shows that you have a lot of other assets to rely on. And this year, the defense has been their best asset. And I thought that, going into the Baltimore game, prior to the Baltimore game, everyone talked about the level of competition and how the Patriots defense hadn't played, a great offense or supposedly a real quarterback. But note that those teams they did play were scoring 2.5 times as many points when they were playing other teams when they weren't playing the Patriots. So take a look at what the Eagles have done this year. The Eagles are averaging 25 points a game. That is 2.5 times as many as they scored tonight. So the Eagles probably one of the better offenses. I mean, I don't think there's any question. One of the better offenses that they've played this year. I think Carson Wentz qualifies as a real quarterback.
I was told he was a real quarterback.
Right, and they held them 2.5 times below their, they held them to 10 points. And I believe that 10 times 2.5 is 25, which is about what the Eagles scored this year. So the defense kind of held up. Meanwhile, in the last 2 weeks since they played Baltimore, the Ravens have just been a buzzsaw. I think they've scored like 90-some points. They're absolutely having their moment right now. And we will
see. Are they peaking too soon, Dave?
So this concept of peaking too soon, this is what we heard about the Patriots back in September. This is not like a real thing. What you're really looking at is you need to be good enough to win in January. And maybe teams figure out what you do and you adjust and you counter adjust. It's not the NFL is not like a this concept of a peak where you go way, way, way up and then you just descend like a parabola coming down the other side. That's not how it works. There's attrition, players get hurt, players get suspended. There's all kinds of shifts and changes. The question is that what you do well, is it sustainable? And that's what we're going to find out with a team that's playing as well as the Ravens right now.
Ben Volen's head just exploded hearing the word parabola.
Well, my head probably exploded saying it, but this concept of sustainability, can the Patriots continue to play like they did today? Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. I think they can actually improve from here, and that there's a lot of room for improvement in this offense.
They did not play their best football, agreed.
Right, exactly. And can the Ravens keep doing what they're doing? We'll find out. Is it something that can survive a couple of injuries? Is it something where if Lamar Jackson rolls an ankle, is he still as effective? I watched Saquon Barkley last week trying to play with a high ankle sprain, and he just is not himself right now. And so and it takes away a lot of your mobility and your ability to do all those amazing things that make Saquon Barkley great. It can the Ravens offense continue to function the way it has if Lamar Jackson has just a pedestrian injury that players suffer all the time, or even if he stays 100% healthy, will team scheme wise figure out what the Ravens are doing?
Correct.
Have some kind of equalizer defensively. And then will the Ravens be able to counter adjust when that inevitably happens? And those are the things that we will find out as the season progresses. But here we are in Massachusetts or New England, and it's just this every game is this referendum on could the team have won the Super Bowl if it was played today? And,
that's well put. That is exactly how the Boston media operates in trying to troll their audience and their customers.
So right, so a good, so a win, like wins aren't good or bad. You know, a good win is a playoff win. A good win is when it gets you is the one that clinches your playoff spot. All wins are good wins if you really think, but a great win. Like, okay, you could have a bad win. And you could have a terrible loss. You could have terrible losses. That loss knocked us out of playoff contention. Or that loss, it was embarrassing. We lost by 100 points. But losses are bad. Wins are good. And to sort of this concept.
A bad win doesn't exist.
Right. Yes.
And does not exist.
There is this toxic idea that fans can't enjoy their victories. They have to objectively say, well, but for...
Bill's not perfect, Dave. Bill's not perfect.
Right. It's okay to admit that Bill Belichick makes mistakes. It's okay to admit that if the Eagles had completed their Hail Mary at the end of the game, the Patriots would have won. The game would have been tied. Might have gone to overtime. Eagles might have gone for two. All those things could have happened. It's okay to admit.
If Nelson Agholor didn't have vertigo while running that post pattern, the Patriots lose the game and you are a honk.
Right.
You're a bobo if you don't think that Nelson Agholor has vertigo.
Stop being a cheerleader and enjoying your win.
Yeah, why should you be a fan? It's just be a big Pats fan. But it's, and this is what's going to happen this week, Dave. Mark my words. They're going to go on the trolls and the Felger bobos at 98.5 are going to go on the air tomorrow and try to crap over and just take steaming dump after steaming dump from 6 a.m. until midnight on a good win on the road, a weather game against a team that we were told had a good quarterback, who, by the way, truth be told, I wanted him to throw the ball from the pocket all night long. All night long. It's a good football team. They have a pedigree. They're not afraid of you. And the goalposts are going to be, they're going to be on the back of a semi-truck, going to be moved tomorrow when everyone goes on the air on both radio stations. Ben Volen's going to, Albert Breer is going to take a piss on it. Ben Volen hopefully will find his way back from the press box to Philadelphia to somewhere New England-ish. It's a good win. They're still finding themselves. It's tough to say that. They're 9-1. I was heartened that they ran the ball pretty well when the Eagles knew they were running it in the last series with Michelle. They trust Michelle's ball security. They threw the ball to him a little bit tonight. N'Keal Harry was worked in a little bit. When Dorsett went out, Harry stayed in, and that's going to pay dividends in the long run. Ben Watson played well.
Listen, caller, they had one touchdown. And Julian Edelman threw it, okay? Can you say?
Well, that's because the quarterback's on a cliff.
Yeah, it's the cliff, buddy. Tom Brady averaged 4.6 yards per attempt.
You know, see,
quarterback rating. His quarterback rating was 67.3. Meanwhile, you know what had a perfect rating? WR1, Julian Edelman, 158.3. Is he also QB1?
Well, I think there's a quarterback controversy in New England.
Can I pause here for 1 second? A thought occurred to me during this game that if Julian Edelman were drafted today, like right now, like during today's games, with all the hype around Lamar Jackson, I think Julian Edelman might have had a chance to play quarterback in this league. Running that run pass option, running the those option reads.
He's adding to a Hall of Fame resume. He's one of the best punt returners in the history of the team. And the team's had some great punt returners. Mike Haynes was great. Mm-hmm. Troy Brown was great. Kevin Falk was great. Edelman's probably the best punt returner in the history of the team. He's played defensive back on the team that went to the Super Bowl. He's been Super Bowl MVP, and he's money, and he's a quadruple threat that way.
Sanu had a nice punt return today and got hurt during it.
And he came back in and he toughed it out. Sanu is a Patriot. It's trite to say that.
Only two catches, so I wonder if he's healthy. Now, the important question, caller, is N'Keal Harry a bust? We can confirm.
He's a glorified intern. 90 seconds, no commercials.
There you go. The broken down tall kid from Arizona State. Four targets, made 3 catches for 18 yards.
Do you think the fat kid from Georgia is going to help you, caller?
I do, actually.
Yeah, I think he's –
I think if they could fix up the broken-down fat kid from Georgia, I want to revisit – I said this a little bit earlier, but this idea – okay. And Tony Romo was talking about this during the game. If you have Wynn instead of Newhouse, you don't even need Wynn to be you know, an all-pro caliber left tackle. But Newhouse is getting beat on plays and forcing early throws. And it, you know what? It's not happening every down. But there are some drive-killing type plays where, you know, you're forcing it out early, you're taking a sack, and boom, the defense is back on the field. So
I'll tell you where it manifested itself.
Avoid those things, and all of a sudden, this offense plays a lot more efficiently.
Yeah, and where it manifested itself for me is that Brady missed a lot of screen passes and swing passes today because the clock in his head was moving quickly.
He also missed OTAs.
Well, that's, again, this is why there's a growing disconnect between Brady and Belichick. I will say that an old friend of mine from Boston Sports Media Watch used to refer to Ron Brace as shopping cart because you can push him around anywhere. And I kind of feel the same way about Newhouse. God love him. He's trying. He was put into a bad spot with Wynn's injury and Jared Valdez's retirement. You know, maybe the pieces fall in place. Romo said this, and they're going to run the ball better when Wynn's back. And I don't think the team, they're kind of in triage mode at the moment. They're integrating Wynn back in. Harry is going to be integrated back in. Sanu's a new player. So they're 9-1, and they're not, hopefully, knock wood, they're not who they're going to be in the next, in the rest of the season to come. And that might be good for game planning purposes. Other teams don't know what to expect.
All right. So let's say, I mean, look, we don't have to sit here and figure out if they're going to win the Super Bowl today.
No, it's a good win. It's a good road win.
And you know what you do? Is you go, okay, they didn't play their best. They got the win. They're 9-1. They're in control for the top six. They're currently in control for the top seed. And now, can they improve? Can they do what they do every year? Isolate the things that they do well and start manufacturing those things from down to down.
They never improve, Dave, at all.
They always get lucky.
There's one of these games every year, and you have to slog your way through some games every year. Think about the game in Pittsburgh last year. They were on the other side of a 17-10 score. It was a slog on the road against a good team in a weather game. This is the kind of game, and somebody sent this to me on Twitter tonight, so I'm kind of stealing this. This is the kind of game you have to win when you're not at your best if you're going to be a really good team.
Well, you look last year, okay? Look at the Tennessee game, which was terrible. Look at the Jacksonville game. And then they lost to Miami and Pittsburgh in back-to-back weeks. And I would say that in all of those games I mentioned, the unifying factor was that they were all played on grass, three of them on Bermuda grass.
Oh, but this is your Bermuda grass theory.
This is my Bermuda.
The grassy knoll had Bermuda grass.
Or the Bermuda grass triangle, if you will. But
oh, I see what you did there.
But, it's my crazy theory, except that I swear to you, the numbers are so staggering and I need to input this year's numbers. This is my crazy conspiracy theory, is that grass
is spot. Can we cue the X-Files music? Can Al cue up the X-Files music every time we talk about your Bermuda grass theory?
My theory is that grass is conspiring against the Patriots, But set that aside for a second. Here's the
other. Are there dispensaries in Foxborough?
Well, here's the other unifying. I have no idea. But this is the other unifying factor is they were all games that the Patriots should have on paper going on, except maybe the Pittsburgh game. The other three games were all against teams that they on paper should have beaten. They got into a rough starts early, could not find their way, couldn't just overcome whatever that was. They were all games a lot like that Ravens game last week, except you had teams that didn't make the playoffs playing like the Ravens played last week against New England. And this year, they get put in that spot, down two scores early, and they grit it out. They go...
It's just an excellent win against in a hostile environment.
Change up the pace in the second half. Wore out that defensive line, which was, you know, really playing well. I was really impressed with Philly's. Again, you know,
Fletcher Cox is a really, really good D-line. That D-line is really good. And they got healthy in the secondary today. Darby came back and a couple other guys. Malcolm Jenkins is a good player. That's a good football team. You and I kind of disagree on that. I think
you know what this was. And another game from this year that I feel like they would have lost last year was that Buffalo game.
Absolutely.
And this game was almost a carbon copy of what happened to Buffalo, where they were overwhelmed by a very good defensive line. And let's, by the way, you know what? Even we're doing this a little bit, like we're acknowledging that the Patriots offense did not play its best tonight, but we're ignoring the fact that the Eagles played very well. And, you know, hey, if you're a heavyweight boxer and the other guy has trained and has a good fight plan and shows up and, you know, punches you in the mouth a few times, and you come out after 10 rounds with a win, you put your belt on and you go home and you feel pretty good about it.
Agreed. I don't think anybody was asking Balboa after Rocky II. Well, maybe the shit sticks in Philadelphia were. Maybe they weren't happy that he just outlasted.
They built him a statue.
Yeah, well, they also built the Philly special statue. I almost feel like it's...
He was a fictional boxer and they built him a statue in real life.
They didn't build Julius Erving a statue. They built Rocky Balboa a statue. And now they got Doug Peterson and Nick Foles with a statue. That's, God bless Philly. That's, don't get used to success. It's over.
Well, if there's one thing I know about Philadelphia. There was a guy who ate. I mean, it was on video. He ate poop, like horse poop, after the game. They weren't planning for a long run of success. They were indulging in madness immediately after the game.
They probably had a concession stand selling shit the year after the Super Bowl, and it probably ran a profit.
All right, that's that. You might be on a limb there. I don't know if that's true, but I think I've never heard of people. Boston's won a lot of championships. I've not once heard of a local person eating horse poop after one of those championships, because they act like they've been there before and they're going to be there again.
What about the people at WEI? I can't say they're not.
Well, listen, I'm not going to accuse any. If you find video evidence, how about this? Instead of just setting the bar at eating poop, doing it on video where everybody can see it. That's how messed up that was. Like, let's not lose sight of that. That person looked at a camera and was like, it is perfectly okay to make a permanent record of me doing this. And that is bananas. I'm not a huge fan. You know, being a Giants fan, people say to me, like, wow, why don't you hate the Patriots? And
careful.
They presume that as a Giants fan, I'm supposed to hate the Patriots. And I've never, I don't know, maybe I missed some memo. I've never looked at them as some kind of rival. Like, we don't play them. We play them once every 4 years. Why am I supposed to be mad at them? But now the Philadelphia Eagles, now, I mean, that goes back to, you know, Randall Cunningham, who I think is an amazing player, but like goes back to those days when they just seemingly couldn't beat them and the Eagles drive me nuts. Like, I hate the Eagles. Having to watch them win a Super Bowl in person was not fun for me.
Was the New York media doing that Buddy Ryan was not afraid of you back when the Giants were running roughshod over the NFC East in the late 80s and early 90s?
I mean, I was like 9 years old, so I don't know what you want from me.
I ask myself that question quite often.
All right. So have we left any stone unturned with this game? I mean, I think, listen, dear loyal listeners, all the people listening to this show have been very enthusiastic. If not, you know, there are not hundreds of thousands of you like there are listening to the radio show from 2 to 6, according to the ratings. But you all seem to understand what's going on out there. And my hope is that we can give you a sense of what the tactics are to try to portray everything as a negative development.
And I so think I the collective
on that for this game.
Right. I think the collective IQ of Patriots fans is, I think, oh, let me flip a coin on this the other way. I think the broken men on 98.5 are becoming more transparent by the day. And I think people are becoming wise to it. That
yes.
Felcher, Mensa Maz, and Large Gymnasium, really, it's a sad shtick that really probably doesn't have.
Well,
it's just, it's I can't even listen to it, Dave.
there is a persuasive element to the tactics that they use. Framing everything as a crisis we see it in politics all the time. From every political party on earth does it. Like you frame a particular thing as a crisis, and that you have the solution to whatever the crisis is. And you know what? Like Damian Harris. Why aren't they playing Damian Harris? This offense is doing nothing, and you're telling me that Damian Harris just is inactive every week? Why? You're scared to admit that Sony Michel can't cut it?
And you and I had this on Saturday. We had a brief exchange on Twitter saying that if you go back to 2001, there's an apprenticeship program usually for Patriots running backs. Yeah. Falk behind J.R. Redmond. Maroney teamed with Corey Dillon. Ridley sat. Vereen sat. White sat. Jimmy Ben White. Jarvis. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis sat. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, a really, really solid, good back who moved the chains. Yep. Never fumbled in the Patriots uniform. Open your eyes. It's right in front of you.
After Dillon, they brought in Sammy Morris.
Sammy Morris was a good player.
It was a veteran. He had one of the worst injuries I've ever heard of. Yeah. Where his clavicle.
Yeah.
It's so gross. I'm not even going to explain it. But the thing with so the thing with Michel, by the way, and we've just touched on a pretty good point. So let's dig into it. Michel, can you name a Patriots rookie who was more productive in our Patriots first round draft pick, who was more productive in their rookie season than Sony Michel?
Maybe Terry Glenn.
I'm sorry, as a skill player, a first round skill player who produced more yards as a rookie than Sony Michel.
Yeah, the only comp in these, as I just said, he's a wider, is Terry Glenn. And the thing that Michel did, he never turned the ball over. His ball security is excellent.
Well, and I'm talking about in the Belichick era, because didn't draft Terry Glenn.
Aaron Dobson? That's a joke. That's a joke.
Who? Dobson?
Aaron Dobson, yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't want to step on it.
Yeah, they don't have it. There's an apprenticeship program. The best rookie wide receiver is Malcolm Mitchell. N'Keal Harry looks the part. I'm excited to see. I can't wait for, I'm sitting there today, just leaning towards the TV every time the ball goes towards Harry. I want him to shove it so far up the asses of those dickheads at 98.5 who called him. Is there ever been a player in the history of Boston sports, except for maybe Romeo Langford, and you can sense a trend here, Romeo Langford and the Celtics, who's been called a bust before he's ever taken the field? It's so goddamn transparent. Turn off your radios, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, so it's portraying everything as a crisis. Bill Belichick is incompetent. We have the solution. You should listen to us.
And here's the other part, Dave, that really pisses me off. Mm-hmm. The 93.7, the really poor imitation, the sinking ship over in Brighton. Hammer and Ryan Hannibal, the teenage blog boy, tweets during the game today, after they score a touchdown, mind you, quote, "Calling a double pass in the red zone speaks to the state of the Patriots' red zone offense at the moment. That's not a good thing. This is after a touchdown."
Right.
Did he tweet the same thing after the double pass in the Baltimore game in the AFC divisional playoff in January of 2015? I'm guessing not.
I mean, not in the red zone, but this comes up every time they succeed with a trick play, and it's this idea that it's somehow suggestive of flaws within the team. Well, I got news for you. I mean, they were out there running trick plays with I'm trying to remember what.
Were they afraid of the defenses when they ran the direct snap play to Falk and the James White on the 2-point conversions?
Yeah, I mean, great point.
Trickery.
In 2007, they were out there running trick plays. They had the play against Pittsburgh.
Anthony Smith.
The game when they totally lit up.
One that Moss caught the ball and threw it back to Brady.
It was a lateral to Moss, right? It had to be.
A lateral back to Brady. And Moss dropped it down to Gaffney. Right.
Moss dropped. He didn't drop it. I mean, Brady threw it low. Moss, it hit the ground. Moss collected it, threw it back to Brady, and then the touchdown to Gaffney. And that was 2007. That was the greatest offense of all time, mm-hmm. as far as anyone has. And there's no metric that anyone can point to that says there's a better defense than 2007 Patriots. And if you can think of one, don't at me, okay? They're just really good. Let's put it that way. Best offense the Patriots have ever had, and they use trick plays too. The points to get the ball in the end zone, and they did that.
I wonder if Hammer and Hannibal said the same thing after the Philly special.
Well, that's where I was going with this. Super Bowl 52, both teams broke out trick plays. And by the way, they accumulated like 1,100 yards of offense between them in that game.
It was
everybody's offense was working just fine in that game, and the Patriots were well in Philly territory when they had the Amendola pass that Brady couldn't quite handle. Okay, so it doesn't necessarily indicate anything that they tried to trick play, except for they thought that they could get the ball in the end zone with it.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell Hannibal's getting at.
Here's the other part of this: if you're trying to persuade people that the Patriots offense is struggling in the end zone, you don't need to make this point. Yes, they are struggling in the red zone.
Kind of empirical at this point.
Right. They got to the 5 and had the play where Brady almost threw a pick, then the one that Edelman dropped. Yes, and they wound up with 3 field goals on their first 3 red zone trips. Yes, this offense has been struggling in the red zone.
They realize that. They're kicking field goals because they realize that.
If that's what they did, if they realized that they're having trouble putting the ball in the end zone and they called a trick play to resolve that, good. That's what you're supposed to do.
That is called coaching.
It's called coaching, right? If what you're doing isn't working, do something else.
What's the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Well, you know what, though? Yeah, that is like sort of a thing that people say, and they attribute it to Albert Einstein, who never said it. And no, I don't think any psychiatrist would agree that is necessarily the clinical definition of insanity. But
I think Ron Borges said that, but he's quoting Mike Sando.
But it is stupid. It is stupid to keep doing the same thing and get the same result over and over again. Eventually, you get to a point where you have to throw the double pass. Why not? But this is what happens. And you know what? I'm going to defend Ryan Hannibal on some level right here, because this stuff has been going on for so long that I feel as if a certain segment of the media, I would say probably people who are my age and younger,
some idiots with no self-conviction.
No. You grow up. That's not what I'm trying to say. When you come up with an understanding that this way of thinking is the only way of thinking, you see all of your peers, all of your professional peers, people you look up to, all doing this. You're indoctrinated into a system to think and deliver this way. And a lot of what we put out in the media, okay? A lot of what's put out in the media is a social contract between reporters.
Yeah, but why are you defending moronic group?
Oh, I'm not. Well, wait. What I'm saying is...
So he's been indoctrinated into the media scene.
Listen, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to speak to something larger than any one individual. It is, I'm a little derailed. Let me gather my thoughts. When we're going to talk about the social contract, there is sort of an unspoken understanding where everybody's looking around, trying to see what everybody else is thinking, what everybody else's perspective on it, and coming to a sort of silently agreed upon consensus of how we're supposed to think about these things, and setting aside facts that don't fit that unspoken contract of what you're supposed to portray. And that's where we get these narratives that are busted. And that's what gives people like you and me something to talk about on this podcast, is this social contract that's unspoken, that nobody, they're the unwritten's, and nobody wants to look like the person who wasn't on board with the popular the standard idea of what's being portrayed. And so
isn't there something that just objectively stupid about repeating the same shit narrative that's been wrong for two decades?
Not necessarily, because you want to be within a zone, like you want to get hired. And there is a system where the people who are going to hire you are people who buy into these narratives and these ideas. And by the way, there are people now, I'm starting to talk to people who are considerably younger than me. And I get to a point where I say, this person does not have any reason to believe that the nonsense that they're saying to me is nonsense. They believe that it's true. And they believe that this is the way you're supposed to dissect these things. They believe you're supposed to. People say that Tom Brady hates working with rookies. I don't know if that's true. Tom Brady has never said that he hates working with rookies. None of them ask Tom Brady if he hates working with rookies. But if Tom Brady gets up there and says, well, I really enjoy working with them, they blast that to the moon. And they just focus on the idea that, well, of course Tom Brady's going to say that. And then they just so they remove from the picture any evidence that contradicts the popular narrative that everybody's sort of working with, that Tom Brady really isn't happy working with the rookies.
Well, let me strip away the flowery language you just used. What you're saying is they're system mediates.
There is a system component to this, yes. And there is.
They're plug and play morons. That's all they are. And that it's really is. You're right when you say that it's created opening for somebody like you to have a different voice and do what you do and you do it well. But it's so frustrating for the consumer who has an ounce of intelligence and the ability to think independently. And they need to be called out on this. And this is part of the reason why you and I have come together on this and why my Twitter account exists. I've become a better sports fan, in my opinion. You know, your mileage may vary. Since I've moved to the West Coast, I can look at it with a bit of distance.
You can see, you see how Seattle covers the Seattle teams.
It's 180 degrees. It really is.
Right. And so, you know, like we had Danny O'Neill on, and we saw how he talks about the teams, and we asked him the question, Rashad Penny, does he suck or blow? And Danny was like, Danny doesn't know that we're making a reference to what Tony Maserati said, that Sony Michel sucks and blows. But Danny took that question and was like, well, no, I would say that he hasn't got much opportunity
yet because Chris Carson's a good player.
Right. Which is reality. But when you're within a bubble that forces your hand to say that Sony Michel is terrible, even though he's the most productive skill rookie that they've had under Belichick, and that's – it is so hard for running backs. We're seeing it with Harris, right? We saw it with James White. We've seen it with all the apprenticeships we talked about. Sony Michel walked in. He had his first 100-yard game in, like, his third game. He has five of them. At this, people keep telling about Stephen Ridley and how great he was. Well, you know what? At this point in his career,
he's Stephen Ridley who can hold on to the ball.
Ridley, at this point in his career, Ridley had his first 100-yard game, like around game 20. So, you know, Sony had already done that five times.
So anyway, the postseason as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, and that's that right. It's not even including his postseason performance, which was. For a rookie to come in and do what he did for them in the postseason.
He was playing against tomato cans in the postseason, Dave. Come on.
Unprecedented. That
absolutely.
Run that he had, that, first of all, that line that they had Sue out there, they had Aaron Donald out there, that run that he had in garbage time. And by the way, people point to his yards per carry, and they look at Nick Chubb, and they go, well, they should have taken Chubb because Chubb gets more yards per carry. Okay. How many times do you see, and I thought of this because it happened in the game on Thursday night. How many games do you see where Chubb, where the Browns have a multi-score lead and they're handing the ball to Nick Chubb at the end when everybody's expecting them to run? Sony was doing that all the time last year, and those carries kill your average. In the game against, In the game against the Browns, Sony had 8 carries for 18 yards in the fourth quarter. when they were up by multiple scores trying to run the clock.
We've said that it's a possession game at that point.
Yes.
And all you have to say about Michelle Davis, let's go in the Wayback Machine. Let's go back to Kansas City for the AFC Championship game with the Patriots behind 28-24 with less than a minute to go with 4th and 1. Who got the ball?
Sony scored a touchdown, right?
Thank you. Thank you.
And
do you think Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, two gentlemen who have in the teens of rings combined, are going to give the ball to somebody who's not one of their best players?
No. And we shouldn't even debate this. Like, we shouldn't even engage in this debate. It's obvious that they lost their left tackle to an injury.
Their center.
Their center, right before the season started.
Mason's hurt.
One of the greatest tight ends of all time. Mm-hmm. The greatest tight end of all time, and a guy who that's not just for as a receiver. That is as a run block.
The full deal, Bavaro. He's Bavaro, the myth of Bavaro. Bavaro was a great player, but he was Bavaro
with
more
Jets.
Than Bavaro.
I mean, Bavaro didn't have.
I just hit you where you live.
No. Listen, Bavaro was a great player. But Gronk is like. If you updated and rebooted, if Mark Bavaro was a superhero movie and they updated it and rebooted it with like a great story, great special effects, that's Gronk. He's just got everything. He's got the speed and the agility and way more than even Bavaro. But
yeah, Bavaro's Adam West Batman and Gronk is Marvel Batman.
Yeah, like before, right, when the first Batman came out, it was a lot of fun and you enjoy it. And
Ronnie Lott enjoyed his ride on Bravaro's back in the 1990 NFC title game, which is one of the greatest football games I've ever seen that absolutely. I did not have a rooting interest in.
I did have a rooting interest in that game, and I remember exactly where I was when it happened. But, okay, so trying to make this point. Okay, so they lose Gronk, they lose Andrews, they lose Wynn. Then their fullback, who is a key component of – they like to run all these wham blocks and or where the fullback leads, gone with Devlin. Okay, so then fine. They got a backup. They got Jakob Johnson. He gets hurt. They're out there running a Landon Roberts. They have a linebacker playing fullback now.
Landon Roberts joining the long line of multi-positional Patriots.
It's not a mystery why they aren't running well. And to think that it's Sony. So now let's go bring in Damian Harris, right? But anyway, I heard somebody recently ask the question. Because there's a lot of talk about the MVP. And, after the last time the Seahawks won, a lot of people were like, it should be Wilson. When they beat San Francisco, it should be Russell Wilson. And somebody asked a really good question. They said, why are people obsessed? Why is the media obsessed with this MVP question in, like, week 10? Like, why does every week it gets adjusted? Last thing I saw, that guy should be the MVP, and I'll tell you exactly why. It's the social contract. It's this idea that we have
to. Yeah, moronics. Absolutely.
Yes, we have to get on the same page. Let's all compare notes.
Why don't you and I start a campaign, or just let's start whispering that Stephon Gilmore should be NFL Defensive Player of the Year? And he won't get it because he doesn't have the numbers and the counting stats.
Like 90% of the people want to agree on who want to vote for, one of the top candidates. And in a year when it's like, and then there's like a very small percentage, somebody always wants to be the one guy who like didn't vote for Mariano Rivera to get in the Hall of Fame, right? You know there's always like one weirdo, but everybody else is really afraid of being the weirdo, and so they all get on board with this idea, like, before we all vote, Julian Edelman's the MVP of the Super Bowl, right? Like, let's talk about it now. Let's
more group thing.
I'd hate to say it's Dante Hightower if I'm going to be the one idiot who says it's Dante Hightower, That's right. It's groupthink, and it's a social. There is so much. You have no idea. Audience, Iron Mike Irons. You just have no idea how much social pressure there is to be on board with the correct opinions and ask questions that everybody within a certain range of, but we had Mark Dondero on before, and that guy has such weird questions, and everybody hated him for it in the press room. You know what I mean? Like half the people, and it's like, eventually people would get a chance to talk to him and realize, like, he wasn't a total, that he was a good person and that he wasn't out to destroy the world, but he's treated as if he is when he asks those questions.
I've called them mean girls before. That's exactly what there's a segment of the media that cover the Patriots that are mean girls. They want everyone to, you know, follow their lead, not question, not ask interesting questions. Just it's as a consumer, it's extremely frustrating. And I'm going to call them out and I'm not going to stop doing it.
Well, you know, it's this thing. And, it reminds me of the experience I had this weekend with the Myles Garrett take, where
bad take, by the way, really bad take.
Well, okay, let's talk it through. So I didn't watch the game. I checked in and out, but I didn't watch the whole game. And so I hear about this thing with Myles Garrett, and I look at I turn on the clip of it, and I see the segment that I think everybody saw, which is him swinging the helmet. And you look at it and you go, my first question in that instance is, what is he doing? Why is he doing that? That's insane. And the other thing was, there was this take running around, which I also feel like you, did not side with, which was that if Garrett had done that to Tom Brady, he'd be suspended. So people made it about Brady for some reason. And I went back and watched
moving goalposts.
Yeah. But okay. But so I went back and looked at the play with that in mind, because my thinking was, this would never happen to Tom Brady. Brady would not get into a fight with a lineman. That just, it's just not the way it's not where his focus is. Okay. And I think he actually has sort of a reputation for being pretty good to the linemen or the pass rushers when they hit him.
He doesn't look like Spalding Smales from Caddyshack, but Mason Rudolph does look like a guy who should be named Spalding Smales.
Well, Rudolph, okay. So the first thing people say, now, once Garrett swung the helmet, that was totally out of line. It's a very dangerous thing to do. I don't know that he really thought it through, and I do feel like to some degree he's looking at a situation where Dave DaCosta, a 315-pound guard, is holding him up. And here comes Mason Rudolph, 235, 6'5", just like Garrett. DaCosta also 6'5". I feel like he sees Rudolph coming around to take some free shots at him. And I think he used the helmet completely out of line. Shouldn't have done it. But I think on some level, there is a protect yourself and go on the offensive kind of thinking there.
All right. Well, he's not, first of all,
but I'm not excusing it. I'm not. I'm
all right. Well, I'm glad you said that. But here's the deal. First of all, if you're going to be a winning football player, you can't do that. Second of all, that altercation that led to the helmet swinging, that happens multiple times every week. He wasn't a disciplined enough football player to keep his emotions under control.
Okay. And I feel that everything you just said also applies to Mason Rudolph. And that's where I went out on a limb and defended Garrett a little bit. But you know what? Here's what I found. You know what? I'm going to apply the same criticism to me that I've applied to other people. There can be two villains in this story. There really can. And you know what? Garrett's not a hero. They have to suspend him for swinging the helmet, because you have to send the message that this is a line that can never be crossed.
Correct.
But that aside, let's look at the other villain in this story, Mason Rudolph. People, once they decided that Garrett was the villain, they looked at it like, oh, so retroactively, everything he did leading up to this point is villainous. And the hit that he puts on Rudolph is portrayed as if that was dirty. It was not. When Garrett first makes contact with Rudolph, it is about a fraction of a second before Rudolph releases the ball.
Don't make this out to be Danielson taking a helmet and hitting Johnny from Cobra Kai over the head. It was an aberrant play. It was terrible. That's the end of it. They're both assholes. Garrett went over the line. That's it.
Well, a lot, right. But I don't think a lot of people agree with the idea that they're both, that they've both done something wrong.
And yeah, there's not a white hat and a black hat.
I don't think, The hit that he put on, it was a normal football play. He can't see the ball being released, and he does exactly what he's coached to do. He plays to the whistle, and people say, well, why didn't he just tackle Rudolph? Why did he – it looked like that tackle took forever and was way after the play. He slowed down so that he wouldn't land on top of Rudolph and get a flag for putting his full weight on the quarterback, which you're not allowed to do. It's a tackle that has become very common in the NFL, where it's like, okay, I've got the guy wrapped up. Now I'm going to twist. He puts his own body underneath Rudolph to make for a softer landing. What Rudolph now does in this point drives me nuts.
A softer landing.
No, it's true. No, go watch the play. I mean,
I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
It struck me funny.
But it is. But he's trying to keep from landing on Rudolph, not for Rudolph's benefit, but for his own, so that he doesn't draw a flag. It's a normal football play.
Up until that point, yes.
What Rudolph does immediately, Rudolph starts trying to take his helmet off. It is totally weird. It's bizarre. He completely lost his cool. He starts trying to punch Garrett after that. Some people say he tried to kick him in the groin. I don't know. I have to go look at the tape again, I guess. But
I would also like to state for the record, I am not philosophically opposed to Steelers getting bashed over the heads of their own helmet. Just saying.
Well, then DaCosta takes Garrett. DaCosta's awesome in this, by the way. Like, can I just say, the hero of this story is Dave DaCosta. DaCosta drags Garrett out. Rudolph runs in again. What a dummy. I mean, what a dummy. Now, does he deserve to get hit with a football helmet for that? No. Being a dummy, there are plenty of penalties in life for that. Getting hit with a football helmet should not be one of them.
In a nutshell, both teams are undisciplined, and there's a reason for that.
Okay, but DaCosta, and let me finish. After Rudolph comes back in and Garrett takes a swing with the helmet, DaCosta pancakes Garrett and holds him down, and that was amazing. Like, he's my hero in the story, and you know what? Suspend Rudolph and Garrett and promote Dave DaCosta. That's
somewhere Ric Flair was smiling.
I hope so. I hope Ric Flair's happy, whatever he's doing. But
that's just evergreen. Right. That's an evergreen statement.
So, you know, I dug in my heels a bit, and I was probably defending Garrett more than I should have, because I wanted to draw people's attention to the idea that sometimes we do things that we shouldn't do because of the context of the situation. And I lost sight of the fact that, yeah, but you still can't do that thing. So,
this is why you're going to not ever truly make it in Boston media, because you can backtrack and admit you're wrong.
Well, I don't know that I'm entirely admitting. I'll admit that the way I portrayed my view was not the best way to do it.
Yeah, huddle it up and run it again, Brown.
And I'll tell you what, people were furious. Like, they could not abide this idea that there was they still can't, by the way. They still can't abide the idea there's any moral ambiguity to what Mason Rudolph did. Like, he has to be portrayed as a complete white hat, and that's not what happened. Anyway, it's really interesting to me how, and this is not a novel concept, but when you say things on Twitter, it gets heated much more quickly. And I'm thinking maybe if I say it out loud, I don't know, maybe people will at least find some aspect of this worth considering. Whereas on Twitter, they just treated me like, as if I had torn down the Aswan Dam and flooded.
It is a platform. It is a platform for rational discourse, of course.
And I hope that this is a platform for rational discourse, this podcast.
Allegedly.
So, and that is why I want to be president.
Oh, I'm not vouching for that.
You know what's funny? I can't run for president after my Myles Garrett take. Like, I can't.
No, absolutely not.
The first debate, they'll be like, listen, dummy. Did you tweet this? And I'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, all right, you're out. Okay, so I feel like we've done a podcast and then some. This was a really good one, I think. I like this episode.
We had some takes on Myles Garrett at the end. You're backpedaling. You're backpedaling like you're Gilmore in his prime. Well done.
Thank you. This was a Gilly Lock on the Garrett take. But
real quick, and we don't have time to talk about this, it appears the take du jour this week is going to be that Tom Brady is tired and frustrated after today's loss, after today's non-loss in his press conference. So we have, gentlemen, start your takes.
Oh, so that's what people are saying, that he was...
A friend of Entitled Town, Mike Petraglia, came out with that, but the overarching early narrative seems to be that Brady is upset with his weapons.
Like last year we saw there was one report how Brady just looked like he wanted to get out of here.
He's not going to be named Patriot Player of the Week again.
Well, last year there was one game where there was a report in the aftermath of the game that Brady was just, he was just fed, just wanted out. Like he must be frustrated. And meanwhile, while that take was being broadcast, I didn't hear it live, but while it was being broadcast, Brady was in the locker room playing with his daughter, having a great time. So I just can't be one of these people who reads too much into a Tom Brady's demeanor in a press conference. It is not necessarily indicative of everything that's going on. And yeah, I look, if I'm Tom Brady, who's a very competitive guy, I'm not particularly happy after. I'm not particularly happy with the way the offense played tonight, but I'm sure he was glad to get a win. And
beats the alternative.
But hey, we have a crisis. Tom Brady's frustrated. There you go.
Yeah, he's moving on. That's gonna be the trampolining off of this take, that Brady's a goner when the season's over. So big yawn from me on this bullshit. Like you said, groupthink, same as it ever was. The same idiots are going to continue writing the same bullshit narratives, and the bobos, the Felcher bobos on the air, are going to propagate it as truth, and the morons among us will lap it up like they always do.
I won't ask who the morons among us are, but I will say that you tend to be more right than not sometimes. So anyway, okay. Well, I think, like I said, I think we've done a podcast here, and do you have any regrets?
No regrets. There's no regrets anytime you come out of a road game with a win, even if it's out of conference. It's a good win, and they'll clean up some stuff. They'll have another week of practice with Harry. Isaiah Wynn comes back next week. And I don't think, if as long as Sanu's leg comes out okay, they'll be good, and they should beat Dallas next week. A good Dallas Sanu team, by the way.
I think what you're trying to say is that no Sanu news is good Sanu news.
All right, Gary Gonnu could actually probably hold down a role next to Dale Arnold more effectively than Rich Teeth does. So,
I think he'd be a good host on. When Tanguay's busy, they bring in Gary Gonnu.
You don't want to bring in an intellectual talent that's superior to Gary Tanguay.
And he's another Gary, which could be threatening.
Yeah, replacement level Garys.
You know, exactly. You don't want too many replacement level Garys running around. Okay. All right. So that brings us to what's on tap. And by the way, folks, please rate us and review us in the iTunes store. We'd really appreciate that. It helps people find us. Even if you don't like us, go ahead and click on the stars, however many you think we deserve. And that would be great. What else? Anything going on? What are we on to now?
We're back to Foxborough, and we are on to the Clapper and the Cowboys.
All right. On to Dallas, everybody. Have a great week. And bye for now.